Recognize Umbral Walker D01. Recognize the Caleb G D02.
Hello, team. Welcome to the cave. I am the Caleb G, and I hate monkeys. And I'm here to introduce the man who is taking his pie to go, Rich Howard. If you would like to get a hold of us for anything, hit us up on Twitter at the YJ Files. Of course, you can find the show at crashingthemode.com or email us directly, whelmedpodcast@gmail.com.
Stick around. Class is in session.
And with all that out of the way, I think I will throw it back to you, Rich, for our Hello, Megan.
Hello, Megan.
The title of this episode is Schooled. It's episode 5. The release date was February 4th, 2011. The in-episode dates cross over from August 3rd to August 4th. The director was Michael Chang, and the writer was Nicole... I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Dubuque? Sorry, Nicole. I don't know. Loved your episode, though. Please don't be upset.
If you would like to tell us how to correctly pronounce your last name, Nicole...
Come on the show. Correct us in person.
Please email us, whelmedpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us when you can appear to tell us how to correct your name and talk about your amazing episode with us. So let's get into our mission briefing here, Rich. Take it away.
Just in time for your next mission.
So the pre-credit scene is actually this. I talked a little bit about last episode. I think it's this pre-credit scene that really made me hammered to me that the writers were taking this show to something very special. And this pre-credit scene, there is an accident on a bridge in Metropolis, puts a bus and some other cars in danger. Bruce Wayne happens to be in a Metropolis version of a Wayne Tech building, overlooking the incident. And he almost gets dressed up as Batman to go help when Superman shows up, kind of secures the bridge and that kind of thing. But Superboy also shows up, but he shows up in a super leap and lands on the bridge, kind of nearly destabilizes it, really. Superman has to secure it. And then after everything's stabilized and the bus is saved, Superboy and Superman have this beautifully awkward moment where Superboy basically reluctantly asks Superman to help him with figuring out the extent of his powers. And Superman is uncomfortable in an interesting way and takes off to help with a major emergency that plays into the rest of the episode. The scene ends with Bruce calling Clark from the Wayne Tech building and telling Clark, we need to talk.
And then from there, we get back to the cave. Superboy is having a hard time processing this interaction with Superman. Black Canary shows up with Red Tornado, and she is talking about how she is at the cave to begin their combat training. There is a little bit of a sparring with Wally. We get some bad jokes from Wally, and he gets summarily kicked in the butt.
Beaten,
yes, by Black Canary. Superboy actually starts to storm off, saying he doesn't need any training because he is a living weapon. And especially since Canary doesn't have superpowers. Well, not fighting superpowers. She's just a really skilled martial artist. But then she kind of goads him back into fighting, and she just wipes the floor with him.
Yeah, wipes the floor with Superboy. And
several times.
Yeah, and then they're face-to-face when, you know, saved by the bell, Batman calls in and informs a team that the Justice League just spent 4 hours fighting an android, which was the emergency that Superman got called off to in the pre-credit scene. DC fans knew who this android was pretty much immediately because they used a very classic old-school version of this android we'll talk about in a minute. Speculation was made that the android was built by Tio Maro, since we've already had a nod to Tio Maro in that previous episode with Twister. But then it's actually stated that it's probably more Professor Ivo, who the team and the Justice League apparently believed was dead. This really leads into some, it gives a lot of depth again to the universe that it's been an active live world this story is being told in before we start watching. The team is assigned to protect two trucks. They've split the android into multiple pieces, and they have six trucks heading in different directions. Two of those trucks have the parts, and they're going to two separate Star Lab facilities, one in New York, one in Boston. We also get a quick look at a map of where they're placing cities. So New York and Boston have Gotham right in between them. The team follows the trucks in civilian clothes on motorcycles. Superboy and Robin follow the truck to New York, and Kid Flash, Miss Martian, and Aqualad follow the truck to Boston.
And this is where things go very badly because the trucks are attacked by amazing robot monkeys.
That's right.
I love these monkeys. Despite my preference for Superboy, I really like these monkeys. In the words of Robin, they are totally Ivo's tweak style. Both trucks separately are attacked by the monkeys, so we have a nice little fight scene cutting back and forth between the two trucks of the separate teams fighting away these robots. So Superboy gets really, really angry at failing this mission, because the monkeys do take the android parts out of the truck. So he leaps off to follow them with his giant super leaps. Calder says, "A, return to the team. We need to reformat. We need to get back together." He rips his comm out of his ear and continues to jump after the monkeys.
Yeah. I mean, multiple times he's lost today. Lost socially to Superman and then to Black Canary, and then monkeys blinded him, and he hates monkeys to start with. Not a good day for Superboy. Meanwhile, back in the subplot, Bruce and Clark sit down to have this conversation that Bruce wanted. So they're sitting in a diner, particularly entertainingly nod to Superman diner called Bibbo's. Bruce orders the devil's food cake, and Clark orders apple pie, which is just hilarious. But here's the thing. When Bruce Wayne sits you down to have a conversation about parenting, you know you're having a bad day. So Bruce tries to explain to Clark about how Superboy needs a mentor, needs Superman. Yes, there's a team. Yes, Bruce is doing his thing. Yes, Black Canary's there. Red Tornado's there. But quote unquote, the boy needs his father, Bruce says. And Superman is really upset about that statement. I am not his father. And gets up and takes his pie to go, like any good superhero should.
And at this point, we cut back to the team. Robin has figured out that the monkeys have a GPS tracking locator on the android pieces. So he hacks in, grabs that GPS signal, and figures out that the pieces are going to Gotham. In fact, his high school. He relays this to Calder. Calder says he and Miss Martian are going to take a little bit of time to get there. So Calder says Robin and Kid Flash need to zip off as quickly as possible. But then we cut over to Gotham. The android, now reassembled as Amazo, is beating the living bejesus out of Superboy.
At this point, Professor Ivo's amazing Amazo. I love how they just make, they nod to it, they smile at it, and they make fun of it all in the same spits of dialogue. It's amazing to me. Superboy, Kid Flash, Robin all converge on Dick Grayson's Gotham Academy High School and are just losing terribly because Amazo has been powered by Black Canary, Captain Atom, Superman, Martian Manhunter. Like, he's got the big guns short of the Lantern's powers right now. He's just destroying them, right? At one point, Kid Flash is nearly crushed to death by Amazo when an arrow comes out of nowhere at Amazo's head. So Amazo switches powers from Superman to Martian Manhunter to dematerialize, so the arrow goes through his head, therefore freeing Kid Flash. Ivo shows up to gloat, and he actually makes a nod in this too, like, you know, I don't normally come to these things, but I wanted to see this play out, kind of a thing. And so he shows up, and partway through the fight, Superboy finally, after losing yet again today, remembers what Canary said and what Canary was trying to teach him, which is sometimes you're going to be fighting somebody who's stronger, better, faster than you. You need to put the fight on your terms. Instead of going straight at Amazo, which is not working, he switches the fight, plays on his own strengths, pun intended, and starts attacking Ivo, which puts Ivo on the defensive, which puts Amazo on the defensive, trying to catch up with Superboy, trying to stop them from hurting Ivo, which switches the energy of the entire fight and helps everybody win. And even Kid Flash is like, oh, uh-oh, Superboy has gone berserk again. But I love that Robin's like, no, this is different. Like, he is, but he isn't. Let's see what he's doing and let's go with it. Right. I love that bit of teamwork and intuition.
And after Superboy turns the tide of the battle, eventually they essentially trick Amazo into using the dematerialization power. And Superboy zips over, putting his fist where Amazo's head will be after he rematerializes, thus shattering it and blowing it off. So they win the day. Ivo does escape, of course. And we cut to a little debrief at the cave. There's a nice moment where Batman is actually praising the team for a job well done, which I really liked there. And we end the episode with Superboy actually demonstrating a little bit of character growth, and he talks to Canary that he's ready to train, ready to listen, ready to work with her.
Yes, I love it. And that's a thing we'll get into. Actually, we might as well get into it right now because we're going straight into feeling the Aster, because I'm feeling so much Aster in this episode.
Superboy, are you all right?
Fine. Feeling the Aster.
Funny enough, this episode's where that phrase comes from. So I had some friends of mine who I got to watch the show. And in the first few episodes, one particular friend of mine was like, you know, all of these kids, all of these characters are kind of jerks, right? And Roy, not a character you really just want to snuggle up with.
I'm sure someone does.
Well, I don't. Maybe somebody does. Yeah, Kid Flash and Aqualad and Robin have a rapport, which is good. But then when you start introducing the new characters, Kid Flash becomes kind of jerky, particularly with some of the weird jokes that he had in Welcome to Happy Harbor, things like that. So I can kind of see that. But I encourage everybody to keep watching because it's scenes like this. It's episodes like this where you get to see that character growth happen. It's a little bit on that border of long form kind of Japanese animation storytelling. Really, it's this balance between American storytelling styles and more kind of Eastern storytelling styles, which I really, really like. Give it a little time, be entertained while you're watching, but then you really get the payoff as things move on. And it's only episode 5 of 26, so it's not really that long form storytelling. Having said all that, the pre-credit scene between Superboy and Superman is a piece of pure gold. It's the scene where my wife turned to me and said, "The show is something else, right? Like, this show is tackling something else." My wife is a teacher, specifically a special education teacher in high school. So to see this kind of a dynamic being played out for a teenage character really kind of resonates with her because she sees lots of dynamics with her kids. This scene shows Superman's reaction being the most human and flawed that I've seen him in a long time, all while keeping the heart of the character alive. He still wants to do good. But this is not a normal situation. I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail during the Canary debrief, because I want to talk about that from a storytelling standpoint. I'm gonna bite the bit, because I'm gonna go off on it in the Canary debrief. So let's just do that, because it's all about Superman and about how to stick to the heart of a character and get it on the screen and do something different with it.
Well, I also liked in this opening scene the fact that Superboy is really trying to help. He just isn't good at it yet.
Right. Yes. You can see where he wants to be the hero. He has to make that choice between, am I going to be a weapon or am I going to be a replacement for Superman? And he, in the opening scenes, he's trying to be one and it goes so badly, he starts swinging toward the other side.
He runs in to try to be helpful. He actually causes more problems. Luckily, Superman is there to save the day. So there's that whole dynamic of, I'm trying to help, but failing. Oh, and the guy that just saved my bacon is this huge source of all my personal problems. And there's that moment in this interchange where Superboy actually gets angry that Superman is kind of yelling at him, right? But then there's that shift emotionally, and you can just see it on his face. And the fact that I'm talking about seeing it on his face of an animated cartoon.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it's so, they do so much of that. And I've mentioned this in the previous episode, I think, like the writers know the most important part about storytelling, and that's what not to say. So that scene where he's like, Superman's like, we don't know the extent of your powers. And then Superboy softens. You can see it. You can hear it in his voice, man. It's perfectly acted. It matches his face where he softens and he's like, well, maybe you could help me with that. We haven't seen Superboy reach out like that since the very, very first episode. And you see that little glimmer of who he wants to be makes an emotional punch for the entire rest of the episode. It makes him more than a teen angst berserker character. It makes him deeper. There's something more going on and we want
to
see it.
I also really love in this scene the fact that Bruce just happens to be there, which is great.
Yeah.
The fact that we've got Bruce sitting at the top of Wayne Enterprise Tower watching this happen is such a nice echo to the fact that Batman is the guy in the Justice League that is always just watching and observing and figuring things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really love the fact that it was the statue with the button under the head to open up the secret door, because that is straight back to the 60s show.
Yeah, yeah. The 60s Batman show, they used to, for those of you who don't know and may perhaps be horrified by the 60s show with modern sensibilities. God, I loved that show when I was a kid. And it, I have such mixed feelings about it now. Anyway, the way they would get into the Batcave is they would flip up a head of William Shakespeare, and there would be a red button, and they put that on the desk of Bruce in the Wayne Tech building, and I can't help but have that just smile at it, being like, okay, that's sweet. That's, again, it's a nod to the love of the full history of the character, right? The silliness, the darkness, the everything trying to balance out in this version of Batman.
And speaking of nods to older things, why don't we move on to Amazo?
Oh, yes, please. I love that the animation team and the writers chose to go with the old school look of Amazo. We've seen it in some other animated movies recently, actually. But from a writing standpoint, it makes more sense having it be the nanite, you know, like T-1000 Terminator version that they showed in the Justice League, where he can more physically morph himself into things and duplicate and reprogram himself. And that was a nod to Justice League Unlimited. That was a brilliant storyline with the Amazo android there. But there's something classic about this look of Amazo. It looks so, I don't know how to describe it, like beautifully silly, like such a nod and throwback to the classic and original. And it also makes it so that when you first see him, you massively underestimate what this android can do. When he starts going, accessing Captain Atom, you're like, oh no, that's not going to go well at all for anybody. You know, I do also like that they did this accessing thing. He may be able to have all the powers, but it kind of gave an almost like a hint that he can only have one at a time, and that's better. That's something that's, from a storyline standpoint, is easier to deal with when you're looking at a fight scene, right? It's this Ultra Boy from, actually probably no one knows Ultra Boy, from the Legion of Superheroes back in the day, the 30th century DC heroes. Ultra Boy had all the powers of basically Superboy, except he could just have one at a time. He could either be super strong or invulnerable. He could either be fast or have, you know, heat vision or whatever. But this allowed him to have a lot of powers, but also made it so tactically the scene and the combat could be broken down tactically. They could figure it out. He couldn't be both invulnerable as Superman and have the phasing power of Martian Manhunter, which is what they figured out to win the fight.
I really like the retro style that they went with for Amazo. I think that Amazo as an enemy, as a villain, is one of those kind of silly characters. Oh, he's a robot that somehow mimics everyone's superpower. There's that level of disconnect where it just doesn't make sense. Like, how does technology work to mimic super speed and Captain Atom's atomic powers and Black Canary's sonic powers? But it doesn't matter. It becomes inconsequential because the show carries it so well.
Yeah, I agree. It just works. Somehow they made it work while nodding to and recognizing this is classic old school DC kind of silliness, but somehow they just made it work.
And they also made it terrifying.
Absolutely.
They made Amazo from a silly android robot villain from the old school golden age to a formidable foe for not only the Justice League itself, but the team.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scary. It wasn't a, okay, well, it's a pushover villain.
Right.
No, this is kind of the first really huge threat that the team faces.
Right.
And they lose many times to
yes,
it.
Yes, they do. And here's the other thing, too. The more I think about it, the more I watch this episode, the more I understand that he is the absolute perfect villain to use at this point. There is no bigger contrast than a single villain with all the powers of the mentors that the team has to show the contrast between the power levels. You have Superman and Superboy. You have, you know, Robin getting his butt kicked because, I mean, what can you do? You can do the best. You got to think your way through it. right? He's got the power of Flash, but, you know, Kid Flash is there. But we already know that Kid Flash is slower. So it's this thing where you get to see the team have to think their way out of a fight with someone who can take them all if you go toe-to-toe with them. That makes it a strategy. That makes it a thought. It makes them working together as a team be the reason why they win that fight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's take that transition. Speaking about teams, let's jump back to Canary real quick.
Yeah. Because
she is instrumental in making this team a functional team.
Please.
I love Black Canary as a character.
Mm-hmm.
I love this version of Black Canary a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Please, more, more, more Black Canary like this. She's a crucial character to Young Justice, period. And she's not in that many episodes. But the way that they write the symbiosis of all of these characters and the interaction of this massive ensemble cast, this Black Canary is combat savvy. She is tactical. She is physically strong. She is mentally strong. You see this strong hero. Yeah, she's female. Yes, female hero. Yes, but a hero, period. But she still has the compassion of a hero, of what a real DC hero should have. She will go she went toe-to-toe with the team against Amazo, came back with bruises, cuts, and bandages. But when she got back, you can feel that she genuinely wants to see these kids move forward. Like, she wants to train them so that they know how to do the job appropriately. But then later on in the series, we see her do way more than that, which is why we have a section called the Canary Debrief, because Canary dives deeper and she's there for the kids in a lot of different ways through both seasons. I love this version of Black Canary.
Something else great about this episode are those magnificent monkeys Professor Ivo made. I think my favorite part of these was that he clearly just wanted to make robot monkeys.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then had to figure out some crazy way to justify them with a goofy Golden Age acronym name.
Mobile Optimal Neural Quotient Infiltrators.
Which makes no sense whatsoever.
No, not at all. Yeah, absolutely. And again, they have this scene where Professor Ivo, he's in a train car. It's being really creepily, you know, lit by the green eerie glow from all the monkeys, and Amazo's there, and he's like this short little guy with, like, he's got suspenders on and like a bow tie, and he just looks as dorky as he should look, except he's somehow super creepy at the same time. And he nods to his own silliness. After all the trouble I went through to find an acronym for monkey. Again, you get this nod to the old school DC silliness while also modernizing them and making them kind of horrifying, actually. And some of the things he says and does later in the season two, I don't know. You do not want to underestimate this guy. He's unpleasant.
Related to the monkeys, a little bit later in the scene, actually, no, I think it was before, when Superboy is first fighting them on the truck.
Yeah.
And they blind him.
Oh, yeah.
There's this great moment where he's kind of flipping out because he got blinded. He doesn't know what's going on. But we see him focus in with his super hearing.
Yeah.
It's really quick. It's a subtle little moment where he realizes that he can use his other super senses to still figure out what's going on and be part of the fight. And I like that because it's just a quick little nod to he's developing. He's learning how to tactically use this wide array of powers he has.
Right.
Rich, you said it a little while ago. I'm going to say it again here. A lot in this episode is about Superboy developing and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it for the whole series. We see it for the entire first and second season.
Yep.
But this is one of those fundamental beginning starting kernels of this concept.
Right. It nods back to Drop Zone, where he's overhearing Bane speaking Spanish. And you can tell, the smile on his face tells you he understands, which makes you wonder, right? It helps to scaffold this learning process for Superboy as he goes through some... I mean, you think his life's rough now. Let's wait till the rest of the season. We find out even more about Superboy and what kind of broken stuff he's got to deal with in his head. Poor guy. I love Superboy.
Now, I know there's one more point we want to bring up here in our Feeling the Aster. I know it's about Robin. I want to let you take this one, Rich.
Yeah, it's just this great again, team building, family building moment where Superboy and Robin, before the monkeys attack, they're on their motorcycles, they're following the truck, and Superboy's pissed. And it's a scene where Robin brings up, does that mean that, you know, Aster is the opposite of disaster? And then Superboy is just angry, and he's like, clearly you're not feeling the Aster. And so it gives this character development moment. This is what I was talking about with my holy trinity of character development, giving information, and moving the plot forward. In this scene, you have this conversation between Superboy and Robin that develops character, moves the plot forward, and gives information. Superboy's pissed. Who is Black Canary to be teaching combat skills to a guy with super strength? And Robin reminding him, this is basically what I live every day. Every day. I am a 14-year-old boy fighting people like Killer Croc. This is what I have to do. And it's part of the job. And fighting guys and women, Devastation, with more strength is part of the job. And I think Superboy hears him. You know what I mean? Like he has so much respect for Robin as a character. I think it's a seed that gets planted and that blossoms later in the episode. I think it helps with what Black Canary was already trying to do with him. And he gets pissed and he gets angry because then basically he's being told like, yeah, you were trying to be a hero. That didn't work out because Superman rejected you. Now you're swinging to the other side, you know, because I guess you're decided you want to be a weapon. And then basically Black Canary and Robin saying like, yeah, and you're not going to be any good at that either. Because you're still going to fight guys that are stronger than you and better than you and faster than you. So basically what I hear Superboy in his head hearing is you're worthless on all fronts, buddy. You suck. Oh, look, and now monkeys are going to kick your butt. And then Amazo's going to kick your butt. And then all of these things where he is basically in the gutter and he can't go anywhere but up and he has to let all that stuff go and start hearing what people are saying. I can hear people listening to this show going, man, Rich, you're overanalyzing this. This is what I'm doing when I watch a show like this that's this good. I can see on the face. I can hear in the conversation what's happening, what's building, what's moving forward. Whether the writers did these things on purpose, like intellectually on purpose, or whether their intuition was just so on point for character development like this, I don't know, and I don't care. But this is what's happening, and this is what I want to see in a show. I want someone to dig deeper and to take a moment to love on these characters and get in their heads.
And speaking of analyzing things and getting into people's heads, let's just go right forward into our Canary debrief.
Stick around. Class is in session.
Rich, you've talked about a lot of the stuff already. Take it the rest of the way home.
Okay, guys. I'm up on my soapbox again. I don't know if we ended up cutting it from the early episodes or not, but there's almost nothing that bugs me more than hearing somebody say that you can't tell a good Superman story because of his powers. I had a conversation with a relative of mine who doesn't read comics. He just said, hey, who's your favorite superhero? I said, Dick Grayson. He said, I don't know who that is. I said, it's the first Robin. He becomes Nightwing. And he was so confused. His comeback was, Robin, why would you like Robin? Why don't you just like Batman? They're the same. So 45 minutes later, he understood exactly why Dick Grayson and Bruce Wayne are not the same. And why, when people love these characters, it's not about the powers. That's typically someone coming from an outsider view, you can tell, haven't read a lot of comics or are a big comic fan when they assume that it's the powers. Maybe when you're 8, it's the powers. But, you know, as I've said before, man, people don't love Spider-Man because arachnophilia is a thing. No, they love Spider-Man because they love Peter Parker. And this is what I want in this story. This is why this story of Superman resonates with me and I like it. Because it hurts. It's not because he's invulnerable that you can't tell a good story. It's because you don't get into the head of who he is. Comic series for Superman like American Alien and stuff like that are just so good because they talk about who he is and who he was, right? He has a painfully human reaction to Superboy. Is it a good one? No. Is he a good dad, quote unquote? No. But this isn't about somebody who had, you know, like had a fling and then had a child and then ignored the child. Superman is dealing with the fact that he didn't get to make any of these choices. In this case, I see him as purposefully avoiding human relationships. We don't see Lois in this series. He's purposefully avoiding human romantic relationships because he doesn't know what he's supposed to do with that. And now, even though he's made that sacrifice where he can't be that close to someone in that kind of way, he now finds out that he has the responsibility of a 16-year-old boy that, you know, some villain organization grew for him. He doesn't know what to do with that. He has no idea what to do with that. He gets called out a lot for being a bad dad. He didn't make the choice to be a dad. I don't agree necessarily with the choices that he makes in this show, being a dad myself. I get it. But I understand how he could say, "Is he not my son? I did not make this choice. This is not a responsibility that I'm responsible for. This is a thing, for lack of a better word. This is a thing that needs to be dealt with, not a child that needs to be nurtured. I've got nothing." So that opening scene and the scene in the diner hits all three of my holy trinity. The scene in the diner gives information about who the Young Justice version of Clark and Bruce are, how they're different, how they're the same. That Bruce is, in this version, is actually, I don't know if I'd call him a good dad, but he's certainly different than a lot of some of the other versions of Bruce that you see in other comics. To the point where he is lecturing Clark about parenting, it's just the way you get the heart of those characters right and turn them just a little bit, just a little bit, to show like some of the shadows or some of the light in characters that you wouldn't expect it to. It fleshes out the background of the world that they live in, shows a glimpse of their history, their friendship, their bond, that Clark would be like, "Hey, Bruce said we need to talk. I'm going to go sit down and talk with Bruce because we don't agree on everything, but he's my friend. And he has something he needs to say to me." It develops Clark's character, even his own character arc that goes into season two, even though he's in so few episodes. This is his refusal to the call of adventure of parenting. It's his classic hero's arc for this particular version of Clark. And we see him in season two. He grows as well, as does Superboy, in this relationship to something that brings me joy to see when I see them together in the next season. It moves the plot forward by establishing that Superboy is going to have to make a choice on his own about what he will want to be, either a weapon or a hero. He doesn't do it because somebody else tells him to. He can't, because no one will tell him what he's supposed to do. And that's what you do with a character in a show, particularly a show about sidekicks. You don't make the show about sidekicks and then have all of the Justice League tell them what they're supposed to do. You let these characters make the decisions for themselves. That empowers them for their character growth. Do not have supporting cast characters in your novel. Do not have NPCs in your story. Take over the scenes. Tell characters what they're supposed to do. Don't do it. Don't have other people tell your heroes to be heroes. Let them do it themselves. There are so many specific examples I could use, but I don't want to get negative on some other shows and things or movies. But just think about it. Watch what happens in this and see what you can take away from it to apply to your own stories, particularly when this lays the groundwork so well for so many powerful and painful future revelations about Superboy's past that we may or may not touch about in Crashing the Mode. Anyway, off my soapbox.
All right, so mentioning the future developments here, let's talk about Crashing the Mode.
Tell us something we don't know yet.
Sorry, BB. We can't risk altering the time stream. We do that, we're all feeling the mode.
As always, folks, we are going to be talking about spoilers and foreshadowing here. If you want to experience the surprise twists of Young Justice yourself, stop listening.
Skip ahead to fan service.
So if you're still here, let's talk about some spoilers. We touched on Bibbos real briefly. Bibbos is not a spoiler, but it is a nice nod to the larger DC universe. Just sets us in that world we all love so much. Really, I think that there wasn't anything super specific in this episode, but the payoff of what this episode entails in later episodes when we learn about Superboy makes this episode so much more important.
Right. This is the first glimpse, like I said before, that we get about Superman, about setting up Superboy's personal, his particular arc and struggle. And here's the big reveal, guys. The reason Superboy doesn't have all the powers of Superman isn't because there was like a problem with the genetic engineering. We find out later that they did make a Superboy that was a perfect clone of Superman who had all of his powers, but was broken psychologically, like was a berserker that was uncontrollable. So Superboy is the second version. He's Superboy 2.0, and they split his DNA with Kryptonian and human DNA, which reduces his power level, but made him more controllable, more manipulatable with the genomes, etc. But who his other half of the human DNA came from? Oh my God. Go ahead, Caleb.
Oh, I'm not even going to mention it right now.
Oh, you're not? Are we not going to reveal it?
No, we're not going to reveal it now. Even though we are crashing the mode here, Rich, I think this surprise is too good.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, it's so good. Let's just say this, folks. If you haven't hazarded a guess yet, the human DNA that was spliced with Clark's to make Superboy here, it has a very big impact on where Superboy is getting his help and advice from.
Yeah.
And as that part of the story develops, we see that there is now a third point in the triangle of Superboy's deciding factor of who his mentor is.
Yeah.
And where his support comes from. It changes from a straight line, I just want to work with Superman, to, oh, wait a minute, now I have this third person, or second person, now I have a triangle going on here.
Right.
What is really happening?
And where Superman's turning away, this other person is reaching out to Superboy,
mm-hmm.
and no one knows how to feel about it.
And that is going to factor in very heavily to later episodes, and I know we're going to talk about it a lot in those later episodes, so that's why I want to gloss over it a little bit right here. I think we need just to move on to fan service.
Yeah.
You've been on your soapbox for a little while, Rich. We need to give you a break.
Oh, thanks.
Take a breath. What's some good fan service for this week?
We can't go too far into the show without giving a shout out to the Young Justice Wiki. We use it a lot. Episodes, breakdowns, directors, writers, everything that you could possibly need with links on it is fantastic. I apologize to whoever is running that wiki. I don't know who you are. Thank you for the wiki. But we'll have a link to it in the show notes and on our website at our resources page as well.
And of course, also on our website, crashingthemode.com, we are still featuring new fan art every single week. So make sure you are checking that out and looking at the artists that we will be linking to. If you are an artist, if you are part of the Young Justice Wiki, if you are doing something cool about Young Justice, please get a hold of us and we will have a chat about how we can feature you, put your art up there, get some links to whatever you're doing. We love this show more than maybe anybody, so we want to talk to the other people who love the show just as much so we can create an awesome, awesome community here about Young Justice. All right, and with all that out of the way, I think it is time to head out of the cave and wrap up this mission. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you giving us a chunk of your time today. And as always, make sure you feel the Aster.
That's right. And also, don't forget, hashtag keep binging YJ. Keep watching the show on Netflix and stay whelmed.
You've been listening to Whelmed, the Young Justice Files podcast. Our computer is voiced by Madison Ray. Our theme was composed by Emily Mio. Our logo was created by Kevin Bates. Whelmed is a fan-made podcast and is not officially affiliated with DC Comics, DC Entertainment, Warner Brothers Animation, and any other owners of Young Justice or its related source material. As such, these companies have sole ownership of all symbols, images, names, logos, and proprietary material related to Young Justice. Original content of this podcast is ours under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening, and stay whelmed.